J7. Number 5A.
All right, now we go on for our last section in the last half an hour here. And we then ask, as I said, we will always then, how do I become one with the standpoint of step two? That the mental can be good and evil. Here we get all those rules that Mrs. Eddy gives. For example, she says on page 392 in the textbook, your decisions will master you, whichever direction they take. This is something she wouldn't say on the level of science itself at all. So you begin to see the dimensionality of it. She's only saying this to the standpoint of step two, when you were struggling with the mental be good and evil. She says, okay, you watch what you do because your decisions are going to match. If you go for the evil thoughts, you have to have that evil experience. But if you go for the influence of God, you're going to have the influence of God's decision. That decision's up to you and it's going to master you. You hear this level. Or what she would say, certainly not on the science or divine science level, but she would say on page 392-24, stand porter at the door of thought, admitting only such conclusions as you wished realized in the bodily results. You will control yourself harmoniously. Here's step two. And sometimes we need this in practice. When things aren't working in science, we're back to metaphysics. Rightly so. Christian Science includes metaphysics. And we better stand porter at the door of thought and not let all these suggestions coming in on the television in the world, the famine, the sickness, the diseases, the death, the... And it's going to probably get worse before it gets better. The little serpent becomes the red dragon before it puffs and goes away. So it's going to scream these world catastrophes and famines and plagues and all this. It's going to be just so loud. And she says, don't let it in. And she as Jesus said in Mark 13:37, and what I say unto you, I say unto all, watch. Now, he wouldn't have said that from a higher level. But he's saying it right here. Watch your mentality. Don't allow anything but God to come in. Here's where it begins to be difficult. Truth is revealed. It needs only to be practiced. This isn't easy. And it's only step two, and we can hardly do it in a day. Because soon we say, oh, do you know what so-and-so tells me that she has? Well, this is what, you know, the doctor said, and this is what she has. See, we're admitting it for so-and-so, which admits it for ourselves. We have to just say, it's a lie, and the father of it, for dust thou art, and dust thou shalt return. And when Jesus heard a lie, he said, steppeth behind me Satan, whether it came from Peter or not. His good disciple, he said, get out of here, I don't want to hear any of that business. Now, we don't have to say that out loud to the people. They would think we were really silly. But to ourselves, we say quietly when this is going on, it's a lie. And it's the father of it, Jesus said. And for dust thou art, and dust thou shalt return. And then she says on Science and Health 392:31, exclude from mortal mind the offending errors. Then the body cannot suffer from them. That's the belief that the body's suffering under. And she says on 393:10, take possession of your body and govern its feelings and action. It's up to you. It's not up to anybody else. You take possession. The husband can't do it. The kids can't do it. The doctor can't do it. It's in our mentality. We take possession of our body. Your decisions will master you. Either you're going to look towards the claim of the sense testimonies, or you're going to look to what science informs you as what's really real. You've got the choice, and it's going to master your life at this point. Ultimately, you're going to make it. But at this point, your decisions master you according to the quality of the mentality that you choose. So she gives the next point she says in Science and Health 261, she says, look away from the body. Hold thoughts steadfastly to the enduring, the good, and the true. And you will bring these into your experience proportionably to the occupancy of your thought. Christian Science is simple. It needs only to be practiced. There's nothing difficult about these rules. They're easy in theory, in letter. The spirit of it is that's where we just can hardly do it from day to day. But it takes practice. My goodness, we have everybody out there doing all their exercises and Jane Fonda's tapes and whoever other lady tapes. And if you don't watch tapes, you're out running around lakes and jogging on paths and using exercise. We exercise so much in the physical to get in shape. One can see how the mental takes the exercise, doesn't it? Over and over and over. Christian Science is revealed. She says it needs only to be practiced. That's the seventh chapter of physiology. Practice, practice, practice. At this point, this is metaphysics. This isn't science, because ultimately in science, science is doing it for us. But it's making us practice. Do you see? Now the pitfall here begins to show up for how do we judge what are good thoughts from bad thoughts? And this is the big point, because, okay, Mrs. Eddy says your decisions will master us, fine. But now, how am I going to judge whether this is good or this is evil? How do I know that I've got to turn away from this and focus on this? So often in practice, I'll hear people say, but how do I know whether what comes to me is right or wrong? Always this, I wonder. Well, from the second degree, all people can do is keep wondering. Or they can say, my feeling tells me what is good from bad. Or my own set of moral and ethical standards tells me what is right from wrong, based on my human education. Or my pastor tells me what's right from wrong. Or the girlfriend next door tells me right from wrong. Or my children are learning in school what is right for wrong, so I listen to them. Or I listen to the last book I read in psychology. We have somebody on this having to have some standard who's going to tell us right from wrong. Is that a standard? No. That doesn't cut much ice, does it? So we can begin to see this isn't a very secure standpoint when we're relying on all these feelings and emotions and all this opinions from everyone. So right away we can see the pitfall of step two is that my mentality is not an impersonal criterion for judging what is good and what is evil. Because maybe I'm thinking evil and calling it good. There's always that possibility. What we need is an impersonal measuring rod by which to judge correctly. We need an absolute standard of reality. We need a divine system of reference. We need some measuring rod to say, this is real and this is unreal. That's impersonal. And that is divinely subjective, that belongs to God and not to man. We need ideas of God that can be used as our absolute standard for judging. And the pitfall of step two also is not only that our mentality certainly is no criterion for judging right from wrong, but the point that as a man thinketh, so is he. This is only true on the level of ordinary metaphysics, because as we will see, really in reality, it's only as a man spiritually understands is he in truth, meaning only as God sees us is really what we are. It's not what we think makes us what we are. It's what God knows about us, what mind knows about us, what spirit knows about us, what soul, principle, life, truth, and love knows about us. That's what's real about us, not what we're thinking. So this is not the highest step. It demands another step. It demands, as we've seen then, turning away once and for all from the second record of creation and reasoning out from error, reasoning out from the problem, reasoning out from the evil, confusion and going now to a standard of reality which has been given to us in the first record of creation, a standard of reality which we have in the textbook in the Bible based on the divine system of reference, based on those capitalized terms as found in the textbook, the seven synonymous terms for God in their fourfold operation on the four levels. And again, the correct reasoning. That on page, just write it down, page 467 in Science and Health, page 29 to 468.3. I go over this all the time, every day, when I see myself getting off the track and reasoning from the problem. I say, all right, you're doing it wrong. Start rightly. Start reasoning correctly. And I start again. And in my mind, I just go over what Mrs. Eddy said. All right, what does Mrs. Eddy say? She says, reasoning from cause to effect in the science of mind. I begin with mind, which can only be understood through its idea and not through its opposite matter. And then I'm all right again. And then I say, yeah, that's right. I've got to stop seeing the world from the standpoint of error. And I've got to see it as mind sees it through its idea. And it just switches right back and I'm all right. Because then I start reasoning out from what God tells me about the situation and not what mortal mind tells me. And that's the Gospel of John. As I said, I'm just going to take us in a step-by-step way up to step four, and then the rest will be on our own. So I'm just helping you with how to approach these steps. Now we come to step three. And we see that then on page 4 in Kapler's booklet, The Ordered Approach to the One Being, which is called Thinking in Ideas. And this is a big, big, big step. Because here it is where all the work is done with the working with the synonymous terms and their ideas. Because step three says, all right, we need an ideal standard of reference. So we ask, what is reality to the standpoint of step three? And what is reality is that only the ideas of God are real and good. Therefore, the rule here is, point A, I learn what ideas of God are. And step in the second point B, and I learn what the ideas of God are not. I learn what illusions are. How is this done? Well, we see through the work that we need a criterion for judging what are ideas and what are illusions. How do we know what are ideas and what are illusions? And here we see that only the textbook of Science and Health defines spiritually the scientific meaning of ideas and illusions. That's where I said that Mrs. Eddy, in giving us this language of spirit in the capitalized terms, it's in the textbook where we find what the ideas of mind are, capitalized mind, what the ideas of capitalized spirit are, what the ideas of soul are, what the ideas of principle are, what the ideas of life, truth, and love are. It's to the textbook, we can only go to see how the capitalized terms for God, how God is defined. Because those symbols are cannot be explained through the mental or psychological concepts. So I follow an impersonal scientific method of text interpretation, studying all of the reference to the synonyms for God as they are found in the textbook, which are based on the rules for studying the seven synonyms for God, as Max Kapler has shown us. So we see this is where we do the concept building. This is where we learn the spiritually scientific meaning of all the ideas of God, as well as the counterfeits. And this we can do is what we call our compendium studies. This is where we take the compendiums and we study what mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love mean through the ideas that define them. For in following a spiritually scientific method of interpretation, as Kapler defines in his books, and as you will see through the various literature then that we have recommended for the subject. You will see that by following, for example, the method of concept building as provided in the compendiums for the study of Christian Science, booklets number 4 to 10 by Kapler. You will see by working with that compendium, let's say on mind, we will see that Max has given us his findings on how he worked in that study group with Dorley when John Dorley asked them in the late 30s to go into the textbook and read all the references to mind in the textbook and find out just how Mrs. Eddy defines mind. Well, they did that, and they looked up all the references to where mind is, and they took a sheet of paper and they wrote down how Mrs. Eddy defined mind, and Max has presented to us a list. It's a good list. It's not a total list, but it's a very good comprehensive list of how she defines mind in the textbook. And that's what we have then in the study aid by Kapler on Christian Science on page 6. What we call our ideas list. Those are our little jargon within the subject. The list of ideas that define for us what mind is. So here we would see in the mind compendium that Mrs. Eddy defines mind as creator, as producer, as parent mind, as forms, as cause, as the first, as basis, as power, as law, as emanation. We begin to see that there, that through the ideas of mind, she begins to build up the meaning of that symbol mind. So she says, well, that symbol mind is empty until defined. What I mean by that symbol is that God, as symbolized by mind, is the creator of the universe. Man is not a creator. God is the creator. And therefore, if God is the creator, God is the only producer. It produces the product. So the divine mind is the creator, and mind is the producer. She says that God as mind is the parent mind. Mind created us, not our human parents. Our real creator is the divine mind. We exist as an idea in mind. It forms and shapes the universe. It gives forms to its image. That what we call matter, we will see at the point of spirit, is just a mind formation. Mind has is causative, and it forms the image. It's an idea in mind. What we see in the universe are ideas of mind. Mind's created them. Mind wanted them. Mind's created that image. And therefore, certainly mortal mind, it creates illusions. Our parents didn't create us. Mind did. And mind created our parents and their parents. That's a whole belief. But what is true is that we are the sons and daughters of God, that we are an image and likeness of God. We're the image in mind. So, and likeness of mind. See, these are things we learn. The compendiums is a terrific subject. That's another subject I took in an introductory class at a summer school, where the whole summer school of 7 days, we just took the compendiums. And the first day, we just started working with mind. And then the second day, we worked with the compendium on spirit, then on soul, then on principle, life, truth, and love. Seeing how Mrs. Eddy defined these terms, because as we go in and look at the spirit compendium, we see, well, that Mrs. Eddy defines spirit through a lot of ideas. Spirit is defined through that spirit separates ideas from illusions, or spirit is the faculty of discernment, or spirit is the warfare between flesh and spirit. Spirit is the birth. Spirit is the only. Spirit is purity. Spirit is focus. And so it is with all the other synonymous terms, that we begin to understand them through concept building. And that's the step 3, is concept building. With these ideas as We can use the compendium. Then we can ask ourselves, well, how do I become one with this step three? Well, we don't only in concept building say what are the ideas of the synonyms, but now, so what? How do I identify with them, these ideas? Well, by bringing my thinking into line with ideas. So it's just that what we do now is, for to live a good life, I must learn to think only ideas. So now we begin to get the spirit of the concept. We begin to say, oh, well, if mind is of the nature of creator and producer and parent mind, now I begin to bring my thinking into line with the creative power of mind just by going over that concept and beginning to see, yes, yes, mind is the creator of the universe. See, we begin to talk to ourselves and say, yes, that's true. I can bring my thought into line with that. I can see that mind created me and not the human mind, and that I'm an idea in mind, and that mind is creative, and that the influence of mind is all power, that person building my house isn't going to be under ignorance, the illusion. See, it builds up an opposite sense. That person is only under the all influence of the divine mind, which is always intelligent, at work. You see, I begin to bring myself in line with that as reality. And the outcome is I begin to free myself from harmful thinking. See, that's the evil. This is step three, begins to free ourselves. The more we begin to bring our consciousness into line with the ideas, the more I'm freed from harmful thinking, and our human ego begins to improve its identity. And here, dualistic thinking is gradually giving way to ideational thinking. Therefore, consciousness of what the I is lifted above the material dualistic level into, at this point, we can call ourselves an ideational I. And in order to do that on step three, we can do an exercise which says, well, I've learned what these ideas are for mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. Now I want to come in line with them. And so the exercise I can do, and Max gives it as an example in his booklet, where with mind I can say, I am the idea intelligence. I am not the illusion ignorance. And under spirit, I can say, I'm the idea substance. I'm not the illusion of being material. Or soul, I'm the idea of unchangeable identity. I'm not the illusion of being subject to changes. Or principle, I am the idea of all harmonious operation. I am not the illusion of being inharmonious, nor is anyone else in the universe, including man. And under life, I could say under the ideas of life, I'm the idea of eternal life, the newness of life, the spontaneity of life. I'm not the idea of being a mortal, in rut, always bored, never knowing what to do, in the existential void. But I'm the idea of life, the ever-flowing of life, the abundance of life, the newness of life, the well of life, the spring of life. Or in truth, I'm the idea of being divinely conscious of having dominion over these ideas. I can grasp them. I can bring them into my experience, and I can focus on them. I can stand porter at the door of thought. I can have that laser beam vision as Jesus did and only see the world from these ideas. I'm not the illusion of being enslaved and powerless. I'm the idea of divine consciousness of the real nature of man. And in love, I'm the idea of perfect fulfillment. I'm not the illusion of being isolated and aimless and wandering all over everywhere restlessly, in a restless state. I am the idea of perfect fulfillment in perfect rest. I rest in action with this atmosphere and understanding of what I am as an ideational I, as I align myself with the ideas of God. It's a wonderful step, isn't it? It's a wonderful exercise. And we do it, and it begins to help us see the world as God sees the world. We can just go over it. It's in the booklet here, in Kapler's booklet, and we just go over that and begin to become one with it. It's such a wonderful step that we would say to ourselves, isn't it the highest? And yet we see, no, it's not the final step. That there still seems to be a sense of duality between the ideational I and the I am God. I am still trying to align myself with God. There's still a sense of duality.